You're listening to Pod for Ham, a podcast from The Incomparable that's all about the musical Hamilton, taking it one track at a time through the original Broadway cast recording. Every episode features different groups of interesting people talking about a single track. Visit us on the web at pod4ham.com or follow us on Twitter at pod4ham.
There are 10 things you need to know.
Number 1.
We rode across the Hudson at dawn. My friend William P. Van Ness signed on as my
number 2.
Welcome back to Pod for Ham, where an ever-changing panel is going track by track through the original cast album of Hamilton, an American musical. Today we are talking about The World Was Wide Enough, in which... Oh no. I'm Monty Ashley.
I'm Andy Anatko.
I'm Casey Barber.
This is the song where it all comes together. If you knew nothing else about Hamilton coming into the play, you know what happens in this song. It's kind of a weird song because I feel like it's three songs stitched together. What do you guys think of it overall?
I really love this song. I know that sounds incredibly morbid, but I think it's such a masterful way to deal with the inevitability, the moment of reckoning, and to, you know, tie everything up into a neat little dual bow, as it were.
Yeah, and especially the way that it starts off by just here is just a very, very calm and passionless recording of the facts that is known, and then there are things that are not known, and then we have to hand it over to the one person who can probably tell us, and of course we're going to make that up, but this is all theater. Yeah, and it really slips in under your emotional radar. You thought that when you heard Burn earlier that, okay, this is the point in which in the musical in which he really wants to make us cry our guts out. He's done that, and he's not going to do that again. And then, oh, crap.
It's actually not that passionless. One thing I've noticed listening to it this time is this is the first time Burr really starts cracking. Even when he's singing earlier in the show about how he wants to be in the room when it happens, he's all very smooth and together. This one, he's all, "Will not make an orphan of my daughter." Like, this, I feel, is where Burr starts really being a person.
Yeah, that's true. I meant the very beginning when it's just fact. It's only, obviously, when the music kind of dips down and we're going into these two guys actually on the field, actually holding loaded guns, that we really, things get real, so
yeah,
to speak.
This is really when you see Burr sort of throwing away his shot in so many ways for the one time that he's not planning things out in advance. He's really letting his emotions take over, and look where it got him.
Yeah, this pretty much ended his political career. Although, interestingly, after the duel, when he was wanted for murder, one of the only places he could safely hide out was Washington, D.C., because it wasn't a state. So he actually served as president of the Senate while officially being hunted for murder, which I think is great.
Yeah, they let him serve out his term. History, you're crazy.
That was generous, I'll say. That shows a nice commitment to a man is definitely guilty, but not until we've exhausted every other option.
Well, you know how they felt about duels. They couldn't decide whether they liked them or didn't like them. Stupid history.
Well, wasn't at the time, wasn't it still, even then, not all the laws against dueling, the fact that they had to go elsewhere to do a duel illegally, doesn't, and stuff I read outside of this, outside of the thing, told me that there are people who duel just like there were people who, like, drunk drive. It's thought of as you're kind of an idiot if you engage in this, and you have a very, very old-fashioned sense of honor and dishonor to want to have a wife and kids and say, I'm willing to risk not just my life, but my wife and my kids, husband and father, over a stupid personal issue. So yeah. I don't think that they would say, well, you know, at least he defended his honor on the field of battle. Like, no, he was a jerk and he threw away his life.
Yeah.
Right. And that kind of also illustrates the difference between Burr and Hamilton, too. I mean, Hamilton did have this very somewhat outmoded sense of honor and identity, and Burr was such a modern guy in so many ways. You know, he was a feminist. He believed that his daughter had the right to be as successful as she wanted to be in life, and did every, you know, he gave her everything he possibly could. And yet it ruins him that he turns back into this old-fashioned, outmoded way of defending yourself.
Yeah. And I don't know, did you see the Drunk History episode with Lin-Manuel Miranda? Oh,
yes.
Yes.
And it's super, super funny. And I'm not being sarcastic when saying, I think they should cast those two actresses in the actual movie if they do a movie. I cannot imagine a better Burr and Hamilton than these two actresses. But he ends it in this, as a guy who has told this story now 18,000 times, not including the 8 performances a week, he still finds like this emotional connection to it. And the last thing he says in the episode is, which is a phrase that's been going through his mind like for the past 10 years, as he's a little bit buzzed, but certainly in control of his faculties, saying, Aaron, the duel was set because of Alexander Hamilton's inability to lay back and think instead of just leaping into action and doing something out of emotion. And the Aaron Burr shot Hamilton because, uncharacteristic for him, he did the exact same thing. He was one guy who tends to lay back, not react, simply let things wash over and bide his time. One guy who tends to let his emotions through. I'm feeling this, so I got to express this right now. And because they swapped positions, that's how they died.
Yeah. I want to give their actual names. That was Alia Shawkat as Alexander Hamilton and Aubrey Plaza blowing my mind at how good she was at Aaron Burr. Interesting note about Drunk History. Their first episode was also, I think their first televised episode was also about Hamilton and Burr.
Yeah.
And in that one, Hamilton was played by Michael Cera, who, like Alia Shawkat, was on Arrested Development.
Wow.
But can we go back to this for 1 second? Can you remember the time as a kid when you found out that there was a time where where the Alexander Hamilton, the guy on the $10 bill, one of the founding fathers, was killed in a duel by a vice president?
By the vice president.
Yes.
And you're thinking, why isn't all history this cool as a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old?
Almost the last interesting thing a vice president ever did.
Well, until we got to Spiro Agnew, right?
Back to this song. It's kind of three different pieces. The first piece I would like to discuss is pretty much a reprise of Ten Dual Commandments, except now it's about something, and Aaron Burr bringing it in. So instead of the company just counting number one, number two, they actually flow that into the lyrics. Like Burr saying, I brought a man along as my number two.
Yes, it is. It's the inevitable countdown. It's finally, you know, we've all been sort of mentally counting down to this moment throughout the run of the play, and now they are actually making their final paces, as it were. And I think it's really interesting how, even when they were first laying out Ten Dual Commandments, and even in Blow Us All Away, which is such a peppy song, and both of those have, you know, a stronger propulsive beat, this one is nothing but dread.
Yeah.
As you move into it. Even where the previous song used humor to sort of defuse what was about to happen, that's all gone now.
Yeah, it's he solves Lin-Manuel Miranda really solves the problem of how do you create tension in a story that everybody knows the answer, the ending of this story, and the fact that you start off with a actual counting of numbers where you know where what's going to happen at 10, that's what increases the dread. But the fact that we've seen this a couple of times before, so we've already, as the audience, been conditioned to expect, no, this is what happens, and we're here's how close we are to all this thing. It's one of the things that really pleases and astounds me so much about this whole musical is that there's so many lines and so many motifs and so many things like the counting down to 10, you'll blow us all away, I'm not going to throw away my shot, that are so on the nose that you would say, okay, freshman theater composition student,
yeah.
The music is great, great ideas, and now we're going to get into why we go into a second draft and a third draft and a fourth draft, because all that stuff, it helped you to get to the end of the first draft, so now you can throw it away. But it works so well. We're with it. There is no eye rolling whatsoever in any of this. And I am one of the Olympic level sarcastic eye rollers when it comes to something that I say, oh, I would never write it that way. I've never written even 10 bars of music, but I know enough to say I would never put something like that in. What an achievement. Yes.
It's really an eye roll proof show, right? There's not a moment in there that you're
because
like,
you don't want to take your eyes off the stage. It's riveting.
Yes. As somebody who has tried to explain the show to people who will not listen to it, I can report some people do manage to roll their eyes a little.
Well, those people are idiots.
They haven't had their eyes opened yet, yeah. Obviously. So speaking of drafts, there is an earlier version of this song that is floating around on YouTube sometimes before it inevitably gets pulled down. And the lyrics are on genius.com. And this is back when the song was called 10 Things, One Thing from its run at the Public. Have you guys listened to this?
No.
It's fascinating. Go look it up on YouTube because I just checked it out before this call to make sure it was up again. But you can always read the lyrics. And it starts out pretty much the same. Lynn changes a few lines of Burr's to actually, I think, make them more emotional and show that crack in his facade there, where he used to say, just apologize, we have worthier pursuits, instead of this man has poisoned my political pursuits. And then he changes, that's when I realize this is not a game, becomes it's him or me, the world will never be the same. But then it drastically changes because Burr lays out his 10 things. And then they do the, like, rewind again. And instead of Hamilton's music less soliloquy, it rewinds and he does his own counting down to one last thing. And they follow the melody line of 10 Dual Commandments again, where he talks about more of his rationale, how about he intended to throw away his shot, the letters he wrote, and really, it's more of, you know, what he was thinking about before the duel instead of the actual bullet moment. It's awesome. And yeah. I think that, as usual, they made the right decision in changing it to its final form. But it's just so cool to, like, see the process and how they initially were presenting this final moment because it's so much more powerful as it is now.
I wonder how much work went into how do we present Burr during this moment. I thought it was very gracious is too strong a word, but I think it was very fair to say that no matter what his thoughts or intentions were going into this duel, let's paint this as a guy who now actually is standing a short distance away from somebody who has a gun and will soon be shooting it at him one way or another. And I don't know what I was thinking about doing before now, but now I'm standing in front of a person who is an exquisite marksman I know very well that seems to be inspecting his gun very, very carefully, possibly to make sure that it's loaded and to make sure that the trigger is going to work, that is wearing his glasses so that he can see me really, really clearly. How confident am I that this is not going to end with me getting shot by this guy that I know is a cool son of a bee, and I think can actually do this, and actually takes things personally enough that he will shoot me just on principle. So we feel a little bit sympathy for Burr, a lot of sympathy.
I've read an interview with Burr's descendants, and they are mad at Ron Chernow's biography that kicked Lin-Manuel Miranda into this, because they feel that in that Aaron Burr is just a villain, but they're very happy with Burr's depiction in the musical because he gets to be more sympathetic and also more artistic. So the musical isn't saying this is definitely what Burr was thinking.
Yeah. Right. They should be happy with this portrayal. I would certainly call it sympathetic. It's, I believe that Leslie Odom said this in the documentary, and he said it possibly in other interviews, where, you know, Burr is being judged on the worst day of his life. And true, he did something really, really bad on that day. But kind of sucks that, you know, I'm the vice president who killed a guy. Whoops.
It's going to take a big donation to the Salvation Army to get people to even, for that be the number two thing on your obituary. And it's, I'm like one of the 80,000, 80 million people who, after hearing this, this music, started reading more and started finding like more in other documentaries. And you're very, very pleased that Miranda was also not afraid to make Hamilton look like a jerk, you know, that, without making it say, oh, here's this saintly person who this awful Aaron Burr plugged, even though he clearly intended to throw away the shot and not shoot him. There are, I was reading a whole bunch of books that were published like before this, or history articles and history publications like the Smithsonian, thinking that people saying that, of course, he left behind the letter that said, well, you know, my intention as I write this letter and leave for this duel is I am not going to shoot Aaron Burr. And there are plenty of people, historians, who are saying it would be exactly like Hamilton to know that, look, if I kill him, I go home and I tear up this letter. If if the duel doesn't happen, I go home and I tear up this letter. If Burr kills me, they find this letter. Burr looks like an ass.
Yeah.
And I look like a saint.
I'll stick it to you from beyond the grave, dude. Yep.
Right. So there's the history is still like questioning. And then there's another article in the Smithsonian. That's the one I was thinking of specifically, about how, well, look, Hamilton's gun had this weird double trigger, hair trigger mechanism on it that would give him an advantage in a duel. And maybe where he's fiddling with the trigger, was he making sure that he had the hair trigger set, or was he making sure that I want to make sure that I don't trigger this accidentally when I intend to? It's still highly, highly controversial, and it would be so easy for Miranda to have skipped over all of this. There's the musical is not in any way incompatible with what's been written before and during and after this musical.
Yes, yeah. Except I will take note that Burr actually, according to the Chernow biography, was a decent shot. That's his confession. Isn't actually
as good as you could be with the hilarious pistols they had back then.
Right. But whatever, Burr, you can downplay it. It's fine.
And when they get to the actual shot at the number 10, paces, fire, and all the music drops out and we just get Hamilton's thoughts, he's not thinking about the duel at all, which I think is fascinating. You'd think he'd be like, oh, no. But just the brief mention of I imagine death so much it feels more like a memory. And then he's on this really surprisingly stream of consciousness, no beat, no melody, ramble, which is very gutsy to put at the climactic moment of your musical.
Yeah, it's I didn't know what to do with this. I'll be absolutely honest. I'm not criticizing it at all. I'm saying that I didn't know what to do with this, because this felt like something you would say when you're frozen between life and death, where I suppose he was in that second before shots are going to be fired. And isn't it interesting that he's not really saying? It really is about, well, what happens after this? Will I be remembered positively or negative no matter what the outcome is? It made me think for the first time that maybe the character of Hamilton that was being portrayed in this in this show, whatever the real Hamilton was like, it was being he accepted this duel and he threw away a shot partly as sort of like a suicide by Burr. Because, well, he was something in him died when his son was killed, and he feels like this is an honorable way to end his life. And I don't even know that that's a correct assumption to make about the words. Like I said, I feel like I have to listen to it another 800 times, which is okay by me, to feel as though why he's saying this exactly here, as opposed to there is exchange of gunfire and then black and then spotlight and monologue from Hamilton.
Well, he's got a complete confidence in an afterlife.
Yeah.
Which,
yes,
not just a metaphorical one. He's going to
see you on the other side.
He's going to the other side where his pal Lawrence is, where Philip is, where Washington is by now.
It is. It's a tough, it's just a really tough part. And, you know, because it does stand on its own, so separate from everything else that occurs in this musical. because it really is, it's just a soliloquy.
Yeah.
And it's a soliloquy that is basically a greatest hits of the musical that we've just listened to, too. Because it's full of, you know, I imagine death so much it feels like a memory. There's Rise Up.
Rise Up, Rise Up.
Teach Me How to Say Goodbye. Raise a Glass to Freedom, of all things. Kind of going back to his youth.
My son is on the other side. He's with my mother on the other side. Washington's watching from the other side. Again, that's one of the triplets that made me think, if he believes in an afterlife, does he think I want to be reunited with my son? I want to see my mother again. I want to be with my good close friend Washington, and I will see my wife soon.
Yeah. It's not all be parted years. From
forever. Yeah.
She's in
after she tidies up my reputation and establishes an orphanage and that sort of stuff.
Yes. But it really does sort of set the scene for the epilogue, Who Lives, Who Dies, Who Tells Your Story. That's really, I wouldn't call it a placeholder because it's such a climactic moment. But, you know, you can't just leave it at that. You need to sort of give us some time for catharsis after this. So it really does bring in the legacy one last time and talk about, you know, how we've always perceived these two guys.
Yeah, I feel like we should talk more about this middle section, but it's just an edifice and it doesn't care what I think. I will say this, I've not seen the musical, but I believe during this whole time the dancer called the Bullet is standing in the middle of the stage waiting to kill Hamilton.
She's very, very slowly, she is like pinching the bullet between her fingers and very slowly moving across the stage from Burr toward Hamilton. If you guys have the Hamiltome, you can see there's a big two-page spread picture of this moment.
I read a brief interview with the person who originated the role of the Bullet. Apparently, the entire musical, whatever background role she's playing, she's looking straight at Hamilton the whole time.
Oh, wow.
Because she knows eventually that's where she's going.
I've seen the show and I didn't notice that part, but there's a lot to look at.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, can I say that is why every single person on the stage of every serious musical or every single show is 100% in the production. I was now prepare to laugh. I don't know if in popular culture the respect for Hamilton versus the respect for Cats, that's a pretty wide gulf, I acknowledge. But I saw the revival a couple months ago, and I was sitting like in the third row, and so you've got all these dancers who are not named performers, they don't have a spotlight, they don't have anything, and yet I really found myself not looking at the main performers oftentimes, just to see in the dark in the background all of these performers who are, each one is making sure that their character is fully engaged in the story, fully a part of the scene without taking any attention away. So in the book, did they say that whether or not this was an instruction that she was given, or did she simply decide, well, of course, I'm going to be looking at Hamilton all the time. That seems like the correct thing for me to do, given what I'm going to be doing at the end of the show.
It was just a real brief interview I read somewhere on the internet. I assume she started doing it, and the director said, yes, keep doing that.
Yes, and take $30 out of petty cash for lunch.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see if whoever is doing it now is still picking up that instruction, because I think that's such a nice little touch.
For everybody who's going to like go to the matinee and then get right back in the ticket line so they can see the evening performance.
Right.
My favorite thing from the Hamiltome for this song is the note where Burr complains about Hamilton wearing his glasses. They have to have Hamilton wear his glasses on and off throughout the show to justify that line. And apparently Miranda keeps losing them just because he doesn't wear glasses and he's only like holding them a couple of times to justify it later on.
Right. I think he wears them for a bit in Blow Us All Away when he talks to Philip, and I can't remember the few times, but they do pop up. Continuity.
Chekhov's bifocals.
So Burr shoots Hamilton and kills him, but the song keeps going.
Yes.
And Burr is no longer super emotional. His voice is not cracking. Back to describing what happens. Somebody tells me, you'd better hide. Good idea. And then he gets to hit his final moment in the play where he basically complains that he's the villain in our history, but he should have known better anyway.
Such a good line. And bringing back in the death doesn't discriminate line from Wait for It. You know, these are all things he knew. He knew very well that this was a bad idea, and yet he went through with it. And his regret is so palpable.
Yeah, too young. The line, of course, too, the world was wide enough for both Hamilton and me. That was from, like, much later in his life, near the end of his life, wasn't it?
Right. Yeah. He did. He lived for 32 more years after this.
Right.
He had a long time to regret.
Got tried for treason.
Yes.
Or something else. Oh.
For trying to take over Mexico. Or something like that.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to do that?
You turn 50 either by a Porsche or you try to take over an adjoining country. but that does add some color to that line. I was too young and blind to see that we're not hearing him after the duel. We're hearing him near the end of his life. Because there's no one who can judge you as perfectly and as unswervingly as yourself looking back on your actions 20 or 30 years later that this meant nothing. It was stupid. There is no reason for me to have done this. That person who shot Alexander Hamilton was a fool and blind.
And honestly, I feel like anyone over the age of 18 can look at themselves as a child and say, boy, that guy was an idiot.
They're two idiots there. Yeah. let's acknowledge that. And I have to admit that it's such an emotionally charged play from start to finish. And of course, by listening to it basically every two times every 3 days since I got it, it's like I kept as I'm doing the dishes and listening to the soundtrack, I'm thinking, okay, you're in that situation and you really don't want this. You know, this idiot, if this idiot calls you out and you say, no, I'm not dueling you, he's gonna say, aha, you see, that's why I'm the better person, because would I have had the guts to just simply go on with that. And I think that maybe I would have been stupid enough if it were just myself, if I had a wife and kids. I'd like to think definitely not, but would have been possible to write a letter in a paper saying, look, if you feel this badly about it, here's where I'm going to be standing in a public park, stripped to the waist and with bare knuckles, and we'll just punch each other to the death, punch and punch and punch each other like Popeye and Bluto. And we'll be bruised, we'll be bleeding, we'll be naked to the waist, and we could say that we've maintained our honor, but we will both be dead, both be alive, and we'll be going back to our families. If you're going to insist that somebody has to maybe die, I'm going to say you're an idiot, and I'm not going to be an idiot like you. Could you get away with that at that time of the history?
Apparently,
I don't know.
It seems like they barely had laws.
Well, if the answer is now, everybody, this is a horrible thing we're contemplating. It's juvenile. It's deadly. I'm going to have to insist you go to New Jersey and do this. No, there's a right way and a wrong way.
Going to New Jersey is always the right way.
Oh, I don't think that's true.
I'm kidding. I don't know. We wouldn't have had such a great play if they had just gone to Battery Park and punched each other in the face a few times. But
hacky sack. First guy to drop it three times has to admit they were wrong. And write a letter to the paper saying, I'm a big old duty head, and the other person is like, awesome.
Well, if anyone is in New York until the end of the year, the New York Public Library has a selection of Hamilton's papers and various documents relating to his life. And they do have the letter that was written to Philip Schuyler, where it notes that Hamilton could voice a still more despicable opinion about Colonel Burr. So you can actually go read the words, including, and then there's also the Reynolds pamphlet and a note that Alexander wrote Eliza about compost for the Grange, which I found fascinating. But if you want to see all the incendiary remarks, they are there.
That compost thing seemed less dramatic. Why didn't that make it into the show?
Of course I'm interested in that one. You know, he's planting seeds in a garden. He has to have compost.
Okay, I'll allow it.
I'm now thinking about like a version of this done by someone who is not nearly as talented as Lin-Manuel Miranda, who painted it as, we're going to modernize it, where we're going to say this guy called, let's say, Adam Hamilton is like an internet troll and keeps using Twitter to say awful things about Burr's band. And finally, Burr's had enough, said, look, let's meet with guns and let's and take it back or meet with guns. And then Burr kills the internet troll. And then would they still be saying, oh, poor Adam Hamilton. All he wanted to do was say that everything he ever done was crap and that... Because Hamilton had a mouth on him. Those letters are what he said was like, that's nasty stuff, man.
Oh, yeah.
My takeaway from the whole Hamilton craze has been how much Hamilton would have loved the internet, just because his reaction to anything was to vomit 80,000 words at people.
Often under a pseudonym.
Right? Even in his final soliloquy, he's like, well, I got to tell you guys a bunch of stuff while this bullet comes at me, by the way.
Less talking, more ducking.
A couple of times he created a second pseudonym to say how great the first pseudonym was, which is something we see today all the time.
So he would have been a very, very successful marketer.
Yeah.
Just
having a keyboard instead of having to write everything longhand.
History has its hashtag on you.
Well played.
I think I may have run out of things to say about this song, incredible and important though it is.
Yes, it's a hard song for many people to listen to. I think that the way they pulled it together was you couldn't have done it to wrench any more heartstrings than you did, Lynn. So good job.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you know it could have ended there, especially with Burr saying, "Hey, look, I'm now this is your story, and I'm the villain in your story."
Yes,
and then curtain, we're done. I think that especially after something so heavy, you're sort of relieved that, oh, good, there's another track on the CD.
Yes. Yeah. Although Burr's final words there, he does walk off the stage and that we don't see him for the final song. So that is truly curtains for Burr, as it were.
Well, that's the same thing as we see the same thing in the opening number, really, where, of course, the last, I suppose, effective words of the opening numbers, and I'm the damn fool who shot him.
Yep.
Yeah.
So basically, he ends that song the way that he ends his participation in the play. That I'm the fool who shot Aaron Burr. This is the end of the first number. I can go away now. You now know everything that history will ever know about me, Aaron Burr, war hero, father,
damn
husband,
fool.
But sure. I bet you'll put me on a face of piece of currency just so in the little scroll underneath, instead of saying Aaron Burr, you will say guy who killed Hamilton, just to twist the knife.
Well, there's not that – aside from people who became president, early vice presidents generally don't get talked about that much.
That's true.
That is it for us. Tune in next week to find out who lived, who died, and who will be telling the story of the final song in Hamilton, an American musical.
Now I'm the villain in your history. I was too young and blind to see. I should have known the world was wide enough for both Hamilton and me. The world was wide enough for both Hamilton.